Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidivishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Joining in?
Yeah, no, he's... Okay, page 55. The best forest is Vrindavan, where one need not live with the animals, but can associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who never leaves Vrindavan. Cultivating Krishna consciousness in Vrindavan is the best means of being liberated from material bondage. For in Vrindavan, one can automatically meditate upon Krishna. Vrindavan is as good as Krishna. Therefore, if one somehow or other gets the opportunity to live in Vrindavan, and if one is not a pretender, but simply lives in Vrindavan and concentrates his mind upon Krishna, one is liberated from material bondage. One's mind is not purified, however, even in Vrindavan, if one is agitated by lusty desires. One should not live in Vrindavan and commit offenses, for a life of offenses in Vrindavan is no better than the lives of the monkeys and the hogs there. And so the Dham is non-different from the Lord, right? Because it's going to be his expansion. So, because he's going to perform activities, right? It means it's about him and the devotees interacting. Where are you going to interact? At a place. So therefore, the place, the interactions, the devotees, then the Lord himself, they'll all be on that same transcendental platform. So serving all of those will give the best benefit, because that's direct. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's the element that we're looking at there. So that's the yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would we recommend for people who are neophyte or whatever mentality they have to better live in Dham because the advancement is fast, even though there are possibility of committing too many offenses?
But see, the point about committing offenses here is one is that one is just developing. But the other is that if one is cultivating that materialistic side. That's the point that's not to be recommended. You know, because the dogs and hogs, they're definitely cultivating the material side of things. You know. So that's why he says a pretender. It's one thing if you're trying sincerely in your mind, then that's what you want. But if it's that you're simply making a show of it, then that's the problem.
But so it should be avoided in any place, anyway.
Yes, but in the Dham you have to be a little bit more. So in other words, those who are, you know, have that tendency, better they stay somewhere else. Because when they come to the Dham, they simply make trouble. Because, you know, it's only about spiritual. In the West, you make politics, it just fits right in. But here you make politics, it's a real annoyance. So.
Maharaj, what's the meaning that we say in Mayapur there's no offense?
Oh, you're working on that one. Wait a minute, it said there was no offense. Okay. Means Lord Chaitanya may not take, if one is trying sincerely, then there's no offense. But if one's a pretender, then naturally there's going to be offense because it's not sincere. Just like little children, do they make any offense? They come and, you know, walk up onto your lap and that and stepping here. It's uncomfortable. They oh, what's that? And they poke, you know, do all kinds of crazy stuff. But it's not an offense. Does that make sense? Because they don't know. What they do know, they're trying to connect that to Krishna. So a neophyte doesn't know much, but whatever he knows, he's connecting it to Krishna. But saying here is those who know more, but only connecting a small part to Krishna and the rest of it's just for themselves. That's what we're talking about here. So that there'll be offenses. Then it's like, even if there's, you know, not still the monkeys and hogs, that's what they're doing. So then you run the risk of ending up in that kind of position. Right? Because otherwise, why are there monkeys and hogs in the dump? Because everybody there, they have to have been, every living entity has to be somehow or another connected to Krishna. So then what does that mean? You understand? Yeah. Yes?
In the case of Dhruva Maharaj, he had mature desires, strong mature desires. And then Narada Muni instructed him to go to Vrindavan and get him the mantra. Through his tapasya and his meditation, he saw the Lord face to face. Was it because he was in Vrindavan? Was it because he followed his guru's instruction?
Because he followed his guru's instruction. That's the main thing. Because otherwise, being in Vrindavan, so many things are in Vrindavan. But that he instructed him to go there, that means things move quicker. So naturally, he'll get results quicker. You know, because he's going to be focused, he's going to just do what his spiritual master ordered. So therefore, then he'll very quickly get his results. So I think it's within 6 months he got it.
Yeah, within 6 months.
Yeah.
Because you can just decide to go to Vrindavan without anyone's blessing.
You can, if that sincerity is there and everything like that. But the point is you have to be able to get in. This Lord Nityananda Prabhu it's his place, so he's controlling it. So if you can get in, then nice. Then you're either getting in because there is potential of sincerity to advance nicely, or you have the, you know, full commitment that you want to go to hell, and that, you know, where else can you go to hell quicker than here? 1,000 times faster ride, you know. It's like what do you call the top fuel ride to hell? That means anything. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that, then you go very fast. So Prabhupada mentions there are people that come here just to go to hell, because in the West, you know, who takes you seriously? Everybody kvetches over there. You know, but you kvetch over here, then people notice it, and you can go to hell so much quicker. Like that. So that's why those who come here with the idea to, you know, we're going to, you know, do this and do that, come with all these kind of pranamoya concepts of, you know, economics and morality, they generally don't do very well. Does that make sense? But if one has that sincere desire, because Prabhupada's saying here, go to Vrindavan. So if you read this and then get inspired, then why not? Like that. I would more worry about, that's one thing, getting here. I would more worry about getting the blessings of the locals to stay here. That would be more important than... Is that okay? Yes.
He said here, Vrindavan is as good as Krishna.
Yes.
So if one is chanting good rounds, and then one finds oneself, like, you know, in one's consciousness, one finds oneself in Vrindavan.
Yes.
So what kind of chanting is that? Is that Namabhasa or...
One is chanting, one finds oneself in Vrindavan.
Yeah. With the help of the holy name, then all of a sudden... One remembers a place in Vrindavan and one is...
No, it's just because the name, his name, form, qualities, pastime, associates, paraphernalia, you know, they're all the Dham, they're all this non-different. So, you know, it's all connected. Just be happy. Okay, so that's why also then service to the Dham, those considerations are important. So, Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, right? So one's living here, it's not just a place to live. It's a matter of that, of doing service like that. That's the whole idea. One's sadhana, of course, is there, but if there's any opportunity to do something for the Dham, cleaning, beautifying, or remembering anything, then that's always an advantage. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "One who knows that material happiness, whether good or bad, in this life or in the next, on this planet or in the heavenly planets, is temporary and useless, and that an intelligent person should not try to enjoy or even think of such things, is the knower of the self. Such a self-realized person knows quite well that material happiness is the very cause of continued material existence and forgetfulness of one's own constitutional position." Right? Because the constitutional position is serving Krishna, while unconstitutional position then is, I'm the controller and enjoyer. So that's why it says, trying to enjoy material energy will keep you here. Trying to give that up and then try to surrender to Krishna, that will get you there. Right? That's the whole point. So it's not, but why be so strong? It's just the common thing. Right? You take the thing. Let's say you have a glass of something, like say a glass of juice. You just take it and drink it. Done? Okay, you get the benefit of drinking the juice. But now if you take that juice, offer it to Krishna, and now drink it, you get the benefit of prasad, and along with that is a side thing, the benefit of the juice. So as long as you're doing the one without the... If you do the material, it does not include the spiritual. But if you do the spiritual, because Krishna is everything, it includes the material. So it's much more intelligent. So it's just a straightforward thing. One who knows that material happiness is the cause why we're here, because we're here from seeing it separate from Krishna. We see it connected to Krishna, we're not here. We're actually liberated. But we see it separate from Krishna, then we're bound, then we're here. Does that make sense?
Transaction is very fast, we cannot really follow.
Sorry?
One second we see it connected to Krishna, another
second we don't. But that's the whole point. I think, is the lowest Anusmriti? Or is there something below that? There's Smriti, Anusmriti, Smriti. I think Dhyan and Samadhi. There's a fifth one, so I don't know if Anusmriti is the lowest or like that, or Dharana's in there. I think Dharana's in there. So Anusmriti, from what I remember, Anusmriti just means occasionally remembering. So our occasional can be, you know, one nanosecond, you know, every now and again. So that's there. So as that increases, then when it becomes more regular, then we call it, you know, remembrance. Mm-hmm. Like
that. That would be on the level of nishta. Like if we take...
Means if it's regular, then we would say that would be there. But that's generally another, that's just how much you remember. So, yes, I'm just taking the remembrance, then we would say that. Or you would take it a little bit. When we're regularly remembering, that would be fixed. Then when there's more of an absorption, then like that, and then it goes up. So we're trying to become steady in remembering the Lord. So if there's any remembrance, that's good. So whatever causes us to remember, then do that more and increase the remembrance.
Can we say that this can be an indication also? The more you remember, the more you progress? Or
yes.
The steadier you are, the more you will remember eventually?
They both nourish each other. That's the thing. Bhakti nourishes bhakti. So you do bhakti and then you get... So we're doing it because that's what's recommended. But then at the same time is that it's always... It itself then generates more of itself. That's... You know, so therefore, you know, Monday morning after the Sunday feast, then your stomach hurts, and then you remember Krishna. So then you can think, "Is yes, I have to do this every Sunday, so I remember Krishna." Yeah, or not. It's a start. It's a start. Okay. After speaking in this way to his wife, Devayani, King Yayati, who was now free from all material desires, called his youngest son Puru and returned Puru's youth in exchange for his old age. Right, so he said this as, you know, still in that youthful form, so it's compatible for the wife to listen to. Right? Who wants to listen to some old guy saying all this? Right?
Side point. Was he also returned for old age in this manner? I mean, if he was young and he enjoyed for 1,000 years... I mean, she probably aged a little bit by that time.
Yeah, but then the point is like, you know, she's hanging out with some young guy, you know, isn't it?
Oh,
you didn't think about it. Hey, okay. Yeah. No, because they'll always be that, have that youth and all that. That's generally because they're on that kind of level. It means he's not. They're on another.
Because of the curse.
That, yes, but she's on a different. Sukracharya, so technically they're like devatas and stuff like that. So. Mm. They're kind of on. They'll always look nice.
And so what's his old age now?
Probably not looking so nice. You know, so it's human. Because then I know if he's human. And she's something of something higher. Because Brahmins, you don't generally count like demigods in that, because they're not absorbed. And demigods you count because they're living that Kshatriya lifestyle, they're managing, they're absorbed in sense gratification. So Brahmins, even if they're from the higher planets, you just count them as Brahmins. So, yeah.
Being a Brahmin is higher than being a demigod?
Anyway, yes. But whether you're human, Brahmin, or there, you know, like the four Kumaras, they somehow or another last 151 trillion years, they still look 5 years old. So.
Mars, in the heavenly planets, like Indra and those parts,
right.
There are Brahmins who do the yagis, but still we count them as Brahmins and not as demigods as such.
Generally, Brihaspati, he'll be a demigod. You know, these others, they have their positions. Or they may take on that position. What I'm meaning is that we're not looking at, he's human, and we're not looking at her, Yayati. Yeah. We're not looking at her position. It just she's a daughter of a Brahmin, even though Sukracharya is one of the demigods. You know, so. Okay. Okay, he called his youngest son Puru and returned Puru's youth in exchange for his own old age. King Yayati gave the southeast to his son Druhyu, the south to his son Yadu, the west to his son Turvasu, and the north to his son Anu. In this way he divided the kingdom. Yayati enthroned his youngest son Puru as the emperor of the entire world and the proprietor of all its riches. And he placed all the other sons who were older than Puru under Puru's control, right? So they had their own kingdoms. And then the center, that would be Puru's kingdom. But he's the emperor above the others. Like that. So they're all kings, but he's the emperor. Like that. So emperor has his own kingdom. This modern thing where, no, you're the emperor, it's all yours. And no one else knows. The emperor has his own kingdom. It's not necessarily that his kingdom is the biggest kingdom. It's just that he has a kingdom, he manages, he does king stuff. But he's the emperor that he controls all the other kings. So in that way you can say it's all his, but he doesn't manage it. He manages his own kingdom. Does that make sense? That's the difference. Like you see, you don't see it so often. It means these old things you see, I think the Romans would do. You'd have a group of 10 soldiers. One of them would be in charge of the group. You know, he's the head of the group. I don't know what they were called, but whatever. So he's in charge of 10. So the centurion was in charge of 100. But that meant he had his group of 10. So there were 10 groups of 10. And so there were 10 heads of 10. But he's the head of the heads of 10. But he has his own group. So he's managing his own group and managing the whole thing. You understand? So you're in touch with what's going on. Because if he's not a king running day-to-day affairs, how does he know how the rest of the world is running? Mm-hmm. But when you have the centurion, he doesn't have anybody else. He's just in charge of 100 men. He doesn't deal with small things because only the guys in charge of 10 do. You understand? So this way it goes up. Then, you know, so then you have 10 of those, and then that's 1,000 men. But he still has his 10 guys he manages. Yes.
Is that the same principle than Dutas and Ganas?
Yes. Like that. Because Radharani has her own people, but then those people, they also have their own people. Like that. Yeah, no, it's the same. Because Gana will be the same flavor. And then the Yuta will be that you're specifically who you're managing. So, so. Means we'll get more into that in the next course. That'll be a prominent element of next course. Yes?
Why him enthroned Puro and not Yadu? Yadu is the eldest.
Because he, you know, just the way he dealt, so naturally he becomes. Still, the line is known as the Yadu dynasty. Having enjoyed sense gratification for many, many years, O King Parikit, Yayati was accustomed to it, but he gave it up entirely in a moment, just as a bird flies away from the nest as soon as its wings have grown. Right, so that's why these examples are there. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 24. Maharaj Yayati was immediately liberated from the bondage of conditioned life by certainly astonishing, but the example given herewith is appropriate. A tiny baby bird, dependent fully on its father and mother, even to eat, suddenly flies away from the nest when its wings have grown. Similarly, if one fully surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is immediately liberated from the bondage of conditioned life. As promised by the Lord Himself, Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Ishyami, Bhagavad Gita 18:66. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.4.18, Kirata Huna Andhra Pulinda Pulkasha Abhira Shumba Yavana and the Kasha races, and even others addicted to sinful acts can be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord, for He is the supreme power. I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto Him. Lord Vishnu is so powerful that He can deliver anyone at once if He is pleased to do so. And Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, can be pleased immediately if we accept His order by surrendering unto Him, as Maharaj Yayati did. Maharaj Yayati was eager to serve Vasudeva, Krishna, and therefore as soon as he wanted to renounce material life, Lord Vasudeva helped him. We must therefore be very sincere in surrendering ourselves unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Then we can immediately be liberated from the bondage of conditioned life. This is clearly expressed in the next verse. So, because he had that determination, then the Lord is very kind, he was able to deal. So the point comes up, oh, but this is very difficult. And Prabhupada says, yes, it is. That's why, that's why it's astonishing. But it's by the Lord's grace one can be detached. Right? Because the point is the jiva must be attached to something. Now we become attached to the material energy. But if we want, then we can become attached to the spiritual energy. But that's by Krishna's grace. So if we're sincere in that, we're focused on that, then naturally it will move forward. Okay? So that's the real point. It's not about, this is difficult, it's this, that. Yes, it's difficult, but it's possible by Krishna's grace. How can you give up what you're holding on to? You have different methods for doing that, all the different religious methods, but the main point is by surrendering to Krishna that we want to serve and please Krishna. It's not about pleasing ourselves. That's considered the central point. Otherwise, then through knowledge, then you understand that what you're holding on to isn't that great. You know, like that. Engaging it in the Lord's service so you get purified, so there's that aspect of sacrifice. You know what I'm saying? So that's what Gita gives, all those different ways of sacrifice. You know, like that. Srila Sukadev Goswami continued, because King Yayati completely surrendered... did we do that? No. Supreme Personality of Godhead Vasudev, he was free from all contamination of the material modes of nature. Because of his self-realization, he was able to fix his mind upon the transcendence, Parabrahman, Vasudeva. and thus he ultimately achieved the position of an associate of the Lord. When Devayani heard Maharaj Yayati's story of the he-goat and she-goat, she understood that this story, which was presented as if a funny joke for entertainment between husband and wife, was intended to awaken her to her constitutional position. Srila Prabhupada comments. When one actually awakens from material life, one understands his real position as an eternal servant of Krishna. This is called liberation. Muktir hitvan yata rupam swarupena vyavastitihi. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.6. Under the influence of Maya, everyone living in this material world thinks that he is the master of everything. Ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. Bhagavad Gita 3.27. One thinks that there is no God or controller, and that one is independent and can do anything. This is the material condition, and when one awakens from this ignorance, he is called liberated. Maharaj Yayati had delivered Devayani from the well, and finally, as a dutiful husband, he instructed her with the story about the he-goat and she-goat, and thus delivered her from the misconception of material happiness. Devayani was quite competent to understand her liberated husband, and therefore she decided to follow him as his faithful wife. So then that's the point, is giving things in a way that they are appreciated. Right? So even though we're dealing with the absolute truth, still, how to present it is nice. So we see that using this, what do we call this? Allegory. Like this. So Narad Muni used this also many times for different devotees. That. So depending upon their position, especially if there's more attachment, more passion, then the tendency is these work very nicely, because you hear the information, but you don't see that it's about yourself. Until you've understood the information, then you get realization, then you understand how it applies. Because if we start with that, then immediately then we get disturbed. Right? Yes?
Speaking of that, how can we be sure that a person who is instructing is ready to hear such things? Like, you know, so if she wasn't ready, what are you calling me? Donkey? It could have gone a different way if she wasn't ready. So how do we in our lives understand when someone's ready or not?
Well, it's just you have to go by the symptoms, how they're responding to what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Like that.
So you kind of start subtly and...
Yes, so that's the point of preaching, is that you're starting out with what will work for the individuals that you're dealing with. So then there's so many varieties of ways and approaches and all that. But the main point is that it works. And if not, then you see how to adjust to make it work. You know, like I mentioned, is that being really strict means being pleasant and all that, like we are now. Then I found when I was speaking to the straight edge, they didn't like it. They wanted, you know, straight in your face, right? So then we started speaking like that. Then we went to another program, and the people looked like the straight edge people, but they weren't exactly the straight edge people. And so talking like that, then the host had to spend 5 hours after the program trying to straighten out their heads. Yeah, so it's just a matter of, you just see what works for that particular individual, that particular audience. So having, you know, how you say, spent time with his wife, you know, we can say it's 1,000+ years, right? Because they already have 3 kids, right? With Devayani. And so then, you know, it appears that he understands the mood, and so then he explained it, she understood it. But it was still presented in that, like a funny joke for entertainment. You know, what would be just the way husband and wife would talk. So
that relates to the man developing the quality of sensitivity?
Yes. But I think it means you have that if you want to apply it within Grihastha life between husband and wife, as if this here, I think. Or it's the same thing, is that you're sensitive to others' natures, so that when you're speaking to them, what wordings, what tone of voice, what kind of examples work for them, so that they appreciate the philosophy. So that's what is mentioned. That's preaching. being insensitive, then devotees have called that hard preaching. But not knowing that it's a lack of sensitivity, it's just thought that, oh, it's just the philosophy. Therefore, they've come up with soft preaching, which just means no preaching. Does that make sense? So the whole point is that it's not the necessarily what words and that you're using. It's the thought and ability to see the nature of those you're talking to and talk in that way. That's preaching. Right? So if we have to identify it as hard or soft, that means we don't actually know preaching. So, you know, and we won't get results. And then we'll blame it on the philosophy, the lifestyle, you know, the presentation, all these different things like that. But when in actuality, it's just lack of our faith. But if we have faith and commitment, and we're committed to others' understanding, then we'll try to use those wordings which they will catch. Does that make sense? That's then called preaching. So sometimes it may be more hard, sometimes it's more soft. That doesn't matter. That's according to the audience. Does that make sense? Generally seeing those who are professional, you know, and good at what they do, they prefer it a little bit more straight. But not uncultured, but straight. And then those who fancy themselves more intellectual and more liberal and more modern and up to date, then it needs to be a lot more, you know, mellow. Like that. Because they take offense, even though they're the most liberal, they take offense the most easy.
They're liberal in taking offenses.
Yeah, they're very liberal in taking offenses. They distribute their offenses to others very liberally, yes. Like that. So they're, in one sense, they can be easier to talk to if they don't have that kind of mood. But if they do have, they're the hardest to talk to. You know, it'd be easier to talk to the guy with the muscle truck and the shotgun and the Fu Manchu mustache than to talk to one of these persons. Because the other person, they want direct answers, though, you know, pleasant, but direct. But these others, they don't want direct answers because they're thoughtful. They think they're smart. They don't want to find out that they're not smart. That's why generally one waits until someone's interested. Like that. We go out and do things that whether they're interested or not, it's direct devotional service. They get the benefit. Big festivals, the Hari Nams, Ratha Yatras, Prasad distribution, like that. But when you're dealing with them individually, then you have to see. That's why it says don't preach to someone who doesn't have that inclination. You can say, no, but we got to preach. No. If you try and the mood's not right, you just, you know, talk about the weather. Be a nice guy. At least the devotees are nice guys.
That is preaching.
You know, just like Regent's Park, you have a bunch of ducks. What do? Right? Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charita, Nectar of Devotion, you know, Krishna book. No. Breadcrumbs. Right? That works. Right? They like the devotees. Say they're coming around, they're associated. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
This sentence that Devayani, she understood her liberated husband and then she followed him.
Yes.
For the wife. We see many of those examples in the Bhagavatam that the ladies follow the husband and then they go back to him.
Yes.
So this kind of gives the impression that without such a husband, then a woman can't go back to God.
No, means the woman, Krishna mentioned, you remember, you go to wherever you remember at the time of death. So you remember Krishna, you go to Krishna. So for the men, they remember Krishna, they go to Krishna. They remember anything else, they end up in anything else. Right? But the wife, she can remember Krishna, go to Krishna, or remember the devotee husband who's remembered Krishna, gone to Krishna, and also God. So she has two ways to go back to Godhead. He only has one. Now, if we want to discuss the point of equality here and how to make it where the men can get this benefit, but
this is not fair.
Yeah, this is not fair. But whatever it is, we'll let that one ride. Does that make sense? So the whole point is because of the nature is there. That's the point. Energy is attached because energy has to come from energetic. So when we're looking at the spiritual, then that means Krishna is the energetic. All energy is as connected to him. But when we look at it in the social context, that will be then the masculine and the feminine. And that's how the dynamic, how everything works. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, you have this nice building, but the point is where is it standing? How can it be here? It's not just floating in the air, right? It's not, what do you call it? Kardama Muni's palace, right? It's sitting on the earth. So therefore, it as a manifestation of energy is then rooted on the earth. That's its support. Without the earth, you can't have this. Because the other one, it flies in the sky because it's rooted on Kardama Muni, his yogic power. So there's always this dynamic. It's just in everything. There's nothing that's not like this. Because Krishna being everything, and he and his energy are non-different. That means everything, there is the masculine and feminine principle. Everything. So therefore, it's just natural in this, when you deal with the social, especially in the human, you have the greatest manifestation of this. Otherwise, if it wasn't the best for manifesting this whole relationship, then why are the Braja pastimes being done in the form of like human beings? Right? Because Dwarka is then taking on that little bit more higher, but Vaikuntha is God, it's not human. Right? So, but it's higher position, but it's restricted in its taste. While if you do the human, the tastes are much wider. Understand? So then, it's just part of the scene. We like it, don't like it. You know, that's our own issue. But in reality, and going back to Godhead, it doesn't actually have any, how you say, intrinsic value. Does that make sense? So that's why anartha nivritti means giving up doubts and misgivings. Issues are misgivings. Doubts is just it doesn't make sense. When I say 2 + 2 = 5, it's like that's a doubt. You know what I'm saying?
4 would be misgiving?
No. But now, if we find that, you know, everybody of this particular category always says 2 + 2 = 5, now, and that annoys me. Why do these people always say that? Now, that's a misgiving.
But I guess it's more easy for the woman to remember the husband, and if the husband is...
No, it's really easy for the husband to remember the wife. The only problem is it won't get him back to Godhead.
She's a devotee.
She's a devotee, but what's he remembering about her?
Devotee.
The devotee part. Okay, then it'll work. But if he remembers the wife part, then it won't work.
But for the wife, I mean, she remembers the
husband. It doesn't matter.
Wow, that's good.
That's the whole point. That's what we're saying. Is that everything in the Vedic system is designed for the nature of the individuals involved. Therefore, it's totally different. Does that make sense? It's totally different. It's also kids.
If she remembers the kids,
then she'll come back as a nice kid.
If they're nice kids.
If they're nice kids, yeah. In her mind, they're nice kids. You know what I'm saying? The dogs think their kids are nice.
They are. Puppy's nice.
Cute, yeah, but they slobber and they pee all over everything.
That's not
cute. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But the point is in the, one will take birth in that position where that natural niceness is there. Mm-hmm.
That's bad. That's bad. To take birth again.
Yes, yes. Oh, I thought you were just saying this. We mentioned this and then she's going, etc. Yes.
Seems to me that it's more of an advantage to be a woman. It's like you can remember your husband and that.
Yeah, but then you have to also have a good husband. You know, you have to work hard in cultivating that. He has to and all that. So we're just pointing out and generically that on that level then it is. So each thing has... What we're saying is for each nature, each thing, it is arranged that its position within the social context is the ideal for it. right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like kids. Everybody takes care of kids because they have no responsibility, right? So now brahmacharis, now then in the Vedic system, they're kids. So therefore, everybody doesn't mind taking care of them, right? Does that make sense? But if one says, no, but I'm an adult and I'm this and that, and why does everyone treat me like this, and I can get it myself and do it myself, why do I need... Then the whole point is that it doesn't work out nicely. It matches that simple, that surrender, menial service, you know, lack of possession, all that. So then it's a whole package, all of the things. But we like to take what we like from, you know, whatever it is, you know, and it doesn't work out because we don't understand the science. That's why the Vedic system is what it is. We have to accept it as it is, and then we can apply ourselves to understand the details, how to apply it, why it's like that, so that we can improve the quality of the dealing. So, does that make sense? So in this instance, yes, it's an advantage. But at the same time, as you see, is that this kind of man, then because of dealing in this, then he's able to switch the other way, so he can switch in that moment. Even though she hasn't switched, she's only switched from material engagement, in the sense of the spiritual. So then that's perfect. But as he can switch into that spiritual and just detach, then cultivate that attachment to Krishna, and then move in that direction. So that system works for the men perfectly, and the other system works for the women perfectly. So according to nature, then that's how it works. Just like, you know, so each varna, each ashram, it has the situation that works best for it. Like the vanaprastha, the rule, they have to be on the edge of the village or the edge of the forest. Because if they go stay farther in, they won't be able to be proper vanaprastha. If they go too far out, then they won't be, they'll have to be too detached. Well, if they're just on the edge, then one, it fits their position on going from grihastha, you know, out. You know, they're just on the edge, so they're on the edge, but they're still in a familiar territory. And at the same time, is then others can take advantage because now they have experience, they can give direction and advice. But they're there. If they had to go out in the middle of the forest, who's going to go out there? You know? So that's the whole thing. It's perfectly designed how to work. Then that's why the Vedic system is the way it is. Is that something? So it's a matter of we accept that, then we can get down to the real business on focusing on Krishna. Because, you know, with some training, one learns all the knowledge and skills required for one's position in varna and ashram. And so then we can just do that as a habit. But the point is to be able to focus on the Supreme, how to see the Lord in everything, how to see the Lord in what you're doing, Him being the recipient of the efforts that one's putting in. Does that make sense? Yeah?
So much. It says that if a man to devotional, the husband to devotional service, then half of the benefit goes to the wife.
Hey, are you trying to stack the deck here or something? Because we already got they have two opportunities and men have one, and now you're going to say that they're already getting half of the benefit anyway. He does all the work, they get half.
Yeah, automatically the wife gets...
No, we understand that, but I'm saying you're bringing this up.
No, my question is, just like the wife, the devotional service, and the man automatically get the half of benefit.
No.
No?
See, it's like this. We'll give the example within money. Money that is the wife's money. Means that she's been given gifts, you know, by her father, by friends, by her husband. Whatever she gives as a gift, is given as a gift, that's considered the property of women. Right? Yes. Being their property, it's their property. It's not someone else's property. You can say, yes, the woman may belong to the man, but the woman's money belongs to the woman. Okay?
Yeah.
But the man's money, then that's very common knowledge that, you know, you're getting off light if it's 50-50.
So what
basically it's you do all the work, they get all the results, but you know, there's enough there to keep you inspired.
10%. Practical.
Yeah, 10%, you know, because that's it. Nine times desire, so therefore 9 and 1. You need less stuff, right? You know what I'm saying? What does a can of cologne cost, right? Nothing. You know, what does a can of perfume cost? No,
and
that costs a lot
more. Who buys the cologne
more.
Anyway? Huh? And who buys the cologne?
Cologne anyway, yeah. So, buy your own cologne, then it ends up in charity, right?
Yeah. So it, well,
you know, you always thought that it was by accident that that cologne was left there when you went traveling.
So what about if the wife purposely want to give the result to the husband?
And then after this, you go home and then say, "See, what I said." Why would you want that? No, but why would you want that? See, the point is that being responsible to take care of the wife, then if she's getting benefits, you want her to have those benefits. You understand? So then she keeps those benefits, and you do your stuff. Her being connected to the husband and being chaste, that protects the husband. Right? And if she's more advanced, he has good association. So that will be the beneficial part. But the credits stay there. They're not shared. Haven't even gotten into if she does something wrong, where the reaction goes. That also goes to the husband.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she keeps part of it. No. Not all.
Take
it easy.
And the kids, till what age the parents absorb?
Some say 13, some say 16. So basically, it's
for boys and girls.
Yeah, it's basically when they figure out. I mean, 16 is the latest. In other words, if they're trained nicely and they have that innocence and all that, then they'll be 16. But if they figured out, you know, what's what, and they're actively involved in that, then it's 13. So you could say in the West at 13, then the parents are getting. Well, those, huh? Eight. If they're rappers, it was 8. Yes.
Why some devotees say that those principles apply to karma kanda part of the activity, means material. And in terms of spiritual, when Srila Prabhupada said, you know, everyone has to fly their own airplane. So, in pure devotional service, then the wife, she has to make the same effort, because, you know, it's not.
Okay. Okay, so he's making that full time, and then she's making that full time. Who's taking care of the kids? You understand? That's the point. That's why at Vanaprastha, then both are doing exactly the same thing. Yeah. But the point is we're saying, oh, that's for karmakanda. But bottom line, how many grihasthas are on the Paramahamsa platform like Maharaj Priyavrata? So that means they're involved in grihastha life because of the material benefits they'll get. So that's there. And Prabhupada always comments, how much have we heard, has Prabhupada gotten into any detail about ashrameda yajnas other than there's a horse? No. So, but in these things, he gets into detail. So why would he? Because that applies to devotees. Mm-hmm. See, it's easy for us to say, oh, it's just That's just karmakanda. But if that's karmakanda, then brahmacharya is not hanging out with girls, who would also be karmakanda. Why do we get so bent out of shape about that? Brahmacharya is caught with a girl, oh, that's big news. You know, you can catch a sannyasi, that's even bigger news. But grihastha is caught with that, you know, how many weeks until nobody cares anymore? Yeah, nobody cares anyway. But, you know, you understand? So the whole point is we use this karmakanda. We have to be careful that we're not using it to get out of responsibilities. Because these are all ethical principles, but we only like to, we pick and choose which ones we like, which ones we don't. Like that. You know, I've had, you know, one very liberal father. So, you know, this and that, you know, so many things, and, you know, not worried about this, you know, I say. Daughter was 13 going on 19, like that, you know, purple eyeliner, the whole thing. This was back in the 80s. That's wild, no? So one day he comes to me because it's been found out that his, the daughter had sent a note to one of our boys to meet her at a certain place. He foolishly went, like that. And then it was found out, and then he's coming to me, the father, and talking Manu, and, you know, cutting off your testicles, and holding them in your hand, and walking to the northeast direction until you fall dead, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. I'm just thinking, it says, this guy's talking that? You know, says, what about all the things Manu says about the girl? How is she behind, over there? How is she sending notes? How is all this going on? And this was at night. It wasn't in the day. So why wasn't she at home? You know, so everybody picks and chooses what they like. That's the problem. So that's why we take what Prabhupada gave. That'll be the proper balance. Then we know, is Prabhupada's talking about this, it must be important. Because it's not he mentioned it once and then left it. He's mentioned it, you know, again and again and again. He'll always bring that point out. So then that means this is important. So it's not karmakanda. In fact, Prabhupada makes the point is there is no material for the pure devotee. So all the activities that are within the realm of duties, they're not material. They see them all in connection with Krishna. But in their mind, they will say, oh, these are material duties, I'm doing them because I'm attached to them. When it's just this for their conditioning, it's just comfortable for them. Yudhishthira's a king, he does kingly stuff. It's going to be comfortable for him. But we see his living in the forest doing brahminical stuff is also easy for him. So the point is they just do what is available and do that particular according to duties. So those duties are defined by Prabhupada. He tells the Shastras, you know, for more detail, like that. And then he quotes, you know, the main relevant points here in his books. And for further detail, he mentions to read there, like that. So what he's quoting, that's relevant for everybody. And what's left in Manu, that's relevant for those who are leaders of society. Is that okay? Yes.
In that quote that we mentioned, in the purport, Prabhupada describes that when the Pandavas, they were going to leave, they didn't have any consideration for Draupadi, and also I think Subhadra was mentioned there as well. And then that's when he quotes that verse. Well, that's when that verse is quoted. So I was trying to understand, how is that?
Which verse is quoted?
The verse that we all have to fly our own plane. Prabhupada mentions that.
Yeah, but did they tell them to go away?
No.
So that's the difference between there. The neglect means they didn't do the standard, okay, are you ready, is everything all right, and all that. They didn't do that. It's just they're going, and so everything's ready, and then they go. Mm-hmm. And she comes along, because she could stay at home, but she's decided to come along. You know? And since they're there, then, you know, they'll deal appropriately, but they don't have to... You don't have to walk around on pins and needles. That's the whole point. That's gone. Possession, that aspect is there. They maintain that connection, then they do. They're not telling them to go away. You know what I'm saying? Because it's you know. So that's the point, is you have to understand the fuller context. So, and she's following them. So if we're using that as the thing, then that's her flying her own plane. She is committed to the husband, not that they're sitting there and trying to encourage and like that. Mm-hmm.
the same case with Gandhari, when she follows Dhritarashtra.
Yes. Like that. So the point is they've made that decision. So it is flying their own plane. But in flying their own plane, they have two options. Right? How you say? In other words, the man's plane is a one-seater, the woman's plane is a two-seater. So if these controls don't work, you go to the next one. They work.
Someone asked me that in that example where we say, in that verse where we say that when the wife remembers at the end of the life, everyone has a husband and he gets the same benefit. But what happens if the husband leaves after the wife, if the wife leaves first? And didn't leave? Is it just she has to wait for some time and then she gets the result of the husband if she remembers him?
If he hasn't gone back to Godhead, then how will that take him back to Godhead? You know, it'd be like then you're working like the Hiranyagarbhas. Those who then worship the Lord as the universal form, because they're worshiping in that form, then when they attain that form, right? Though they're devotees, but they're seeing, they're worshiping him through the universal form. But the universal form still manifests as the universe. Does that make sense? And who's running that, you know, is Lord Brahma. So then they'll go and they'll merge into Lord Brahma's body. Then when the universe is wound up and goes back into the Lord, then at that time when Brahma leaves and goes to the Lord, then they'll go to the Lord. So, you know, detail of how that'll happen is, the point is you remember Krishna, then you go back to Godhead. But at least, remember here, husband goes back to Godhead, then you go too. The point is we have to, the point is to not overthink, because we're thinking it's the mechanics that makes it work. No, it's the consciousness and mentality that makes it work. Because you don't think of something that you're not attached to. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
The husband could be back to Godhead while he's living.
That's also there. Yeah.
Even.
Yeah. So it's like that. You know. So if the husband's a bozo and not a devotee, then you have a problem. You know. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gold Pingala.